Summer is here, and if you're lucky, you'll have time to read a good book, or maybe even two. Today, we'll help you make the most of that time with recommendations for your summer reading list. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's time for our summer book show. And whether you're looking for scientific exploration, fascinating biography, or an opportunity to get lost in a novel, we have something that will make your to-be-read list. We'll get reading recommendations from Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Judy Stafford of The Book People in Sioux City. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The weather has warmed up. Kids are getting out of school. Vacations are on the horizon. And it is time to make your summer reading list. To help you do that, Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City have come by. Hello, Jan and Paul.
Hi.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And with us on the phone all the way from Sioux City, Judy Stafford of The Book People. Hello, Judy.
Hi.
Hi, Judy.
Thank you so much for being here, Judy. And tell us a little bit about The Book People. How long have you been in Sioux City?
Well, Book People started in 1977 and has been continuously owned by some really strong women here in town. Currently, Chris Kamenson, who purchased the store in 2003. And we have been an independent bookstore presence, the only one in Sioux City during all of that time.
Wow.
It's
well,
a great place.
Congratulations to you.
I need to come visit, but thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, we'd love to have you visit. And I was just at your store a couple weeks ago at Prairie Light.
Were you?
Oh, you were?
Yes, I was. Absolutely.
Okay. Wonderful. We need a bookstore exchange program, I think, around here.
Yeah.
All right. So. Everybody has created their lists, and Judy, since this is your first time on the show, I'm going to give you the honor of going first. And let's start with fiction today. And we don't have to break it up too much, but I know there are a few nonfiction books on everybody's list. So, Judy, do you have a fiction pick for us that you'd like to tell us about?
I do. I would love to start with LaRose, Louise Erdrich's latest.
That's mine.
I have to tell you, I did not get a list. So
No, don't worry.
That's fine.
I think that's a wonderful recommendation if two of you picked the same book. So LaRose by Louise Erdrich. Tell me about it.
Please add to that, Paul, whatever I have to say.
Uh-huh.
So again, this is a brand new release from Louise Erdrich, one of my very favorite authors. And this is a story of just a tragedy of Landro Iron, who was out hunting and accidentally shot and killed the 5-year-old son of a friend.
A very close friend.
Yeah, very close friend of his. And in fact, Landro, has a 5-year-old son of his own, LaRose, who is also a best friend to the child who was killed. And after much thought and exploration, Landro and his wife, Emmeline, decided that, keeping with their native tradition, they needed to give their son, LaRose, to the grieving family to help heal these wounds. So the story, and I have just started reading it myself, so I didn't want to read too much into this because I want to enjoy the ride here.
Yeah, and don't tell too much about it because people, I think, are going to love this book.
Oh, I do too. Would you add anything else, Paul?
It's sort of their Ojibwe tribe, and the whole thing is sort of ethics, not as we white people think of them, but it's like the ethics as they operate, and in a way that has a much finer and more subtle outcome than just sending someone to jail or You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And so when I, in the middle of it, I kept thinking, this is ethics. This is the Ojibwe ethics. And it is, oh, you just love these people.
What's the time period that this takes place in? Is this a modern story?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's 1999, right? Yep.
Fascinating. All right, that's La Rose by Louise Erdrich. And again, that made two lists this hour. But, Paul, you get to pick a different one to talk about. So what is your next pick?
Okay, my next one is a book which won the New York Critics Circle Award this year. And it is called The Sellout by Paul Beatty. He is an African-American writer with great, great satirical touch. And he has a handful of books that he's written. And I want to just here's how it begins.
Okay.
Prologue. This may be hard to believe coming from a black man, but I've never stolen anything. Never cheated on my taxes or at cards. Never snuck into the movies or failed to give back the extra change to a drugstore cashier, indifferent to the ways of mercantilism and minimum wage expectations. Never burgled a house, held up a liquor store. And he goes on for a while, and he says, but here I am in the cavernous chambers of the Supreme Court of the United States of America. My car illegally and somewhat ironically parked on Constitution Avenue. My hands cuffed and crossed behind my back. My right to remain silent long since waved and said goodbye to. As I sit in a thickly padded chair that, much like this country, isn't quite as comfortable as it looks. And he just knows how to write this kind of stuff. And it's very fast moving. And the main character had sort of a lunatic father who had he was an academic, but he was sort of a crazy academic. And the son was very bitter about him. And he makes the decision he's going to do something special, but I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Right.
But it is so funny.
So it's a fast, fun, thought-provoking read.
Yes.
All right. The Sellout by Paul Beatty. And Jan, we are over to you.
Well, I have The Excellent Lombards by Jane Hamilton. And Jane Hamilton is the author most famously of A Map of the World. And she lives in, she lives in southern Wisconsin and sets many of her books there. And this one is no exception. It's set, in fact, it may be the most autobiographical.
Really?
It's set in an apple orchard that's owned, that has been handed down jointly to two brothers. One of the brothers had actually gone to college and not intended to run this apple orchard, and married a woman he met in college, and then decided that he was going to come back, which was sort of upsetting to the other brother that was already there, because they inherited it together, but the other brother had not assumed that they would share it. And so it's sort of told from the point of view of the tomboy daughter of this couple, this college-educated couple, who is completely in love with the apple orchard and is just sort of starting to understand the difficulties that her father and uncle are having. And it's really wonderful. She's always funny in the moment. And the mother, the college-educated mother, is a librarian in the town, and she's very wry and sort of has a view of this whole thing that she has a more distant view than the two brothers that are actually running the operation. Although there's a lot of really wonderful stuff about baling hay and picking apples and developers encroaching on their property, those evil developers that always win in America.
Right, right. And, I'm sure that's something a lot of Iowans can really relate to.
Right, right. So it's a wonderful book.
The Excellent Lombards by Jane Hamilton. And Judy, that brings us back to you. What's your next pick?
Well, I chose The Meaning of Names, and it's written by Karen Gettert Shoemaker. And Karen is a professor at the University of Nebraska, and it happens to be Nebraska's read this year, like Lila is for.
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah. Uh-huh.
And I just happened upon this book, and I absolutely loved it. It's set in 1918 in the farm country here in Nebraska, not far from me. And it's a story of a pretty ordinary woman who is trying to raise her family during some, 1918, so some pretty extraordinary times. She's living with her husband and her four children. On a farm. She's estranged from her parents because she married against their will, and is confronting, at the time, violence and prejudice against the German population during this wartime.
Is this Michelle Hoover?
No, it's not.
No.
It's similar theme.
And I
similar
was going
theme,
to
yeah.
mention that. It really reminded me of Bottomland.
Which is another good book. Yeah,
it's fabulous, set in Iowa. This one happens to be set in Nebraska. But the other issue, of course, during that time is influenza. And so there's a lot of historical reference in this book as well, which was really fascinating, as there was in Bottomland also. Mm-hmm. So she's working to keep, trying to keep her family safe from the effects of war. I think we can all relate to that. And it was kind of interesting, too, that some of the historical references have to do with President Wilson during this World War I. And the country's wave of anti-German sentiment, things like all of a sudden Liberty cabbage replaces sauerkraut.
Right, right.
advertisements warning that no krauts need to apply, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a lesson for me. I hadn't realized there was that much of this backlash during this World War I, and that's on me. So I found the historical references in this book really interesting and even personal. My grandmother was around during this time and in this location, and I grew up hearing.
We've got to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. That's The Meaning of Names by Karen Gettert Shoemaker. We'll continue in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer book show. We are making our lists for our summer reading. And with me today, we have Judy Stafford of The Book People in Sioux City. She was just talking about The Meaning of Names by Karen Gettert Shoemaker, which is a Nebraska author, and the gorgeous Nebraska picture on the cover of that book. We also have Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And Paul, I think it's your turn again.
Okay. I've got a brand new book from Jung Yun. That's Jungyun. I don't know exactly how to say it, but it's called Shelter. And it's about a Korean family, an older family that came over from Korea, and a younger family that is the next generation. And it just starts out so sadly. The old guy is rich, and he's got the greatest house in the world. And the young guy has never been able to get things going. The first scene, he's trying to sell the house, and it's just a mess. And this guy has terrible relationship with his father. They just have always hated each other. And it's you think that there is no hope, that there's no way that this guy's life is going to end up crazy. But then something really bad happens to the old guy, and things change a bit in ways that are unusually positive, given the tenor of most novels that come out these days. But the characters are all very, very powerfully done. And the woman is from North Dakota, of the vast North Dakota Korean community. And she went to a writing program in the East. And it's just a lovely book.
All right. Shelter, and again, we're probably saying her name wrong, but Jung Yoon?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
That sounds better.
All right. Y-U-N is her last name. And Jan, it's your turn again.
I have a book that's actually being published in July by Stuart Nadler, and it's called The Inseparables. And it is a little Philip Roth-like, but maybe Philip Roth light, maybe. He's funnier in the moment than Philip Roth, and he doesn't sacrifice the characters to the plot in the same way that Philip Roth does. But there is a sort of this kind of absurdity that the novel's based around that does kind of remind me of Roth, and that is that there are three generations of women in a family that make up this novel, and the grandmother, the matriarch Henrietta, had been a strong second wave feminist, had taught at Columbia, and had written a book before she was a mother, so probably when she was about 30, that was about women's sexual liberation. And it was taken wrong by both sides. And so she fled Columbia with a man she met in a restaurant and went to Western Massachusetts, and he opened a restaurant. And as the book opens, he has died. She's deeply grieving because she'd had a good marriage. But she's found that she has all these bills because he had opened a sort of a French heavy sauce kind of restaurant in the 70s and never kept up with the kind of way we cook now. Mm-hmm. And so she hadn't realized how badly this restaurant was doing and how many. And so she's decided to let the book be republished, which people have wanted to happen forever. And at the same time, her daughter, who is a doctor, is tired of her marriage and sends her daughter, Lydia, the granddaughter, to a prep school. And Lydia gets involved as a 15-year-old, not fully involved, but sort of, you know, gets into a liaison with a rich, creepy kid. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to figure out how she looks to him. And so she takes a picture of herself with her phone in the shower.
Oh.
And then he steals her phone and, you know, sends it around the campus. And
that's how it's done.
That's
right?
How it's done. But so it's there's this kind of parallel between the novel her grandmother had written and this thing that's happened to her. And so her grandmother can really understand.
Right, how information gets out of control and is misconstrued.
Yeah.
All right.
And
anyway. This sounds like a stressful read, Dan.
It's not stressful because it's...
Maybe I'm a mother. Maybe I'm projecting. All right. It sounds intriguing. How's that?
It's quick-paced. You won't want to put it down.
All right. The Inseparables by Stuart Nadler. And Judy, we're back to you.
All right. I want to talk for a moment about The Flood Girls. It's a debut novel by Richard, and I'm not positive how to pronounce his last name, Fifield.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Paul, do you know, or Jan?
Fifield.
Fifield, okay. I just love this book. It is one of the funniest books I've read. There's also a lot of tender and tragic moments also in the book, but much of it is so humorously written. The premise is it's 1991, and the Flood Girls references the softball team of this woman, woman's bar that she owns. She has this softball team full of absolute characters. And her
summer
daughter,
book. That's yeah. great.
Pardon? Yep, the Flood Girls. So the setting is in Quinn, Montana. The population is 956. And some of the blurb is just funny. It says it's a town where nearly all of the volunteer firemen are named Jim, where the Dirty Shame, the only bar in town, refuses to serve mixed drinks because it's too much work. So anyway, the owner of the bar's daughter, Rachel, has come back into town after 9 years. She was pretty much the town slut, as it says, and she ended up getting sober and decided to make amends. She needed to come back and do them in person. And she moves into this, into a trailer next to her former best friend, Crystal, who is living with this, a man you just hate to hate, or love to hate, rather. And Crystal's older child, 12-year-old Jake. Jake is this fabulous 12-year-old boy who loves sequins and sewing. You just absolutely love the characters in this book. And again, it's funny, but it's full of love and, you know, trying to make amends and just living with characters. Mm-hmm. It's a fabulous debut novel. I really recommend it.
And it does sound like the perfect vacation read.
Oh, it is. Does. But there are moments too that are sad, certainly. But it's I think a gifted first novel.
All right, Judy, thank you so much. Flood Girls by Richard Fifield. And Paul, it's your turn again.
Okay. For all of you who read Alan First novels, and there are a lot of you, good luck. I mean, good luck. Good news.
Good news.
Alan First, A Hero of France, another one of his absolutely incredible Eric Ambler like maybe even Alfred Hitchcock-like. It's France during World War II. People are in the underground, and they're mainly trying to save the lives of American and English pilots who get shot down. And they try to get them back over the line so that they can come back and shoot down more Nazis. And there are about six characters that operate as a group, and they're all for different reasons. Some of them are Jewish. Some of them have long, long history going back. And, you know, it's just great, these scenes where they're in the train and they have to keep it from the Germans that the Americans can't speak French or German. And so there are all kinds of little things like that that are beautifully done. But if you like any of his other books, and chances are you do, A Hero of France is going to be an absolutely winner for a summer book.
All right. Yeah, I think Judy just described my perfect summer book, and you just described my dad's perfect summer book.
Yeah, so it's a great dad summer book.
All right.
And it's almost Father's Day.
Right? It's true. Thank you. So that's Alan First's A Hero of France. And back to you, Jan.
Well, since Paul had a World War II novel, I will talk about one too, and one that Paul's also read, so he can chime in anytime. But it's by Jean Ross Justice, who was an Iowa City novelist and short story writer that died this spring, and And she published this book. She has two collections of short stories that were published previously, and this book was published just right before she died. And it's called Till My Baby Comes Home, and it takes place in North Carolina, mostly during World War II, right after Pearl Harbor and through the end of the war, although then it jumps later. But the characters are, again, three generations, although the grandmother is not as important as she was in The Inseparables. But the character Hallie had a child very young, and so her daughter is 16, but she herself is still, 32. And so both of them, and the soldiers come to this town to...
On maneuvers.
I was going to say to practice.
Yeah.
and so the soldiers, of course, bring a worldview to the women in this town that they wouldn't have otherwise, both to the daughter and to the mother. And so it's really interesting. And she switches back and forth from the perspective of the daughter and the mother very easily. And
Beautiful writing. Some quite amusing writing, too. Some of the dialogue is really good.
But it was a really, more than World War One. I mean, World War II really changed America in terms of rural versus urban, I think, and in terms of how people married. Mm-hmm. I mean, they stopped marrying just the local boys.
Right.
Yeah. And so very subtly she gets in those sort of larger issues about the changing demographics of the country through what happens with the characters. Yeah. And both of them end up working in a factory for the war effort, which changes them too, of course.
That sounds lovely.
Oh, it's
beautiful.
It's really beautiful. Published in paperback.
Yes, with a beautiful cover, kind of a noir cover.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's Till My Baby Comes Home by Jean Ross Justice. And we're back to you, Judy. What's next? And we are going to need to pick up the pace, everybody. You're warned that we've got a lot of books to talk about yet. Judy.
Okay. The next book I wanted to mention is called The Readers of Broken Wheel Recommend. And it's a book by Katarina Bivald. This book is about a Swedish book seller, this young woman who has a pen pal relationship with a woman named Amy Harris in Iowa. And the name of the town in Iowa is Broken Wheel. So they have been pen pals coupled by their love of books, and they write about books. And they were, writing for a long time. When Sarah decided she would make the trip, nothing going on at all in her life, makes the trip to Broken Wheel, Iowa. She arrives just in time to discover that it's the day of Amy's funeral. So she, with help from the community in this small town, help her move into Amy's house. And they, it's just such a fun read. And it's been a really popular book club book. It's a great summer read, I think.
Okay. That sounds great.
So she takes Amy's books and opens a used bookstore in this tiny little town. And so all of the characters gravitate around that bookstore. So I'll let it go at that. But it's really a fun read and another Iowa focus.
All right. Great.
That's been in my stack for quite a while. It's gotten my best intentions.
I understand those stacks.
Yep. All right. Readers of Broken Wheel Recommend. And Paul, we are back to you.
Okay. I have a book that will be coming out in July. It is called Miss Jane by Brad Watson, who is a student of the great Barry Hanna, who is a short story writer and was no longer living. But Miss Jane is a story about one of Brad Watson's relatives. It is a novel, but she was born in the end of the 19th century, and she has she was born with physical defects that affect reproduction. And any number of other things of female nature. And she is, her life might as well, might be one of the worst lives in the world, but she is lively and interesting.
And resilient.
This is in the early 20th century in Mississippi. Her parents are poor, although not destitute. There is a wonderful doctor in town who keeps trying to help her, but her problem is that they haven't discovered yet how to fix what she has. And she has a very interesting sister. It's a great Southern book, and I read it real slowly, and I don't want to say anything else, but Brad Watson, Miss Jane, will save you one.
All right. Brad Watson, the book is Miss Jane. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's our summer book show with Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Judy Stafford of The Book People in Sioux City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer book show. We're making lists and checking them twice this hour. With me, Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, Judy Stafford of The Book People in Sioux City. We've been talking about novels all hour so far, and we'll talk about novels a little bit more, but if you want to start throwing nonfiction in there, we can certainly do that as well. And Jan, it is your turn.
Okay, so I'm going to take my turn with one more novel.
All right.
This one is a... It's a pretty light, you know, light fun read. So it is a summer reading, and it is a knockoff of Pride and Prejudice, and some people don't appreciate that, but
and some people eat it up like candy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, it's kind of amazing how the, you know, obviously it isn't Jane Austen's sentences, but it is amazing how her plot holds up to 200 years later.
Right, and, it's true.
Because Eligible is set in Cincinnati, and there are five daughters in this family. Two of them are in New York. One is a yoga teacher, and one is an editor.
Uh-huh.
Both of them unmarried, approaching 40, and their father has a heart attack, and they go home to discover that their parents, who they always had assumed were well off because they had inherited the house they'd lived in, and her father are not. The mother has rooms full of things that she's ordered on the Home Shopping Channel, and five unmarried daughters.
And so,
you know, and in the end, they're all happily married, and of course, the one that marries Mr. Darcy is the last one to go.
Right. Oh, that sounds
fun. But it is fun.
All right. Yeah, you know, they can keep retelling that story. That's all right.
She does a better job than Helena Fielding, if you ask me.
Oh, okay. So you like this better than the Bridget Jones series.
Oh, yes, I do.
All right. That's Eligible by Curtis Sittenfeld. And Judy, back to you.
Okay. So my next pick is another novel by Tracy Chevalier, At the Edge of the Orchard. Beautiful cover picture of apples. So that's the orchard, apples. The setting is 1838. James and Sadie Goodenough they settled where their wagon got stuck. I love that. In the beginning. In the muddy, stagnant swamps of northwest Ohio. It's a tough time. They and their children, the ones who have not passed, they had, I think, 11 children. They created an orchard there, and they bought the saplings from a local tree man known as Johnny Appleseed. So they needed 50 apple trees required to stake their claim here. So it's the story of trying to make it in this really tough area. The apples turn out to be an issue with the family. James loves these apples. His wife learned how to make them into hard cider, which hastens the downfall of this family. Halfway through the book, the youngest son ends up going to California, where he cultivates seeds from sequoia trees. There's a lot of, again, historical notes throughout this book, but I really liked it. It's a hard read in some ways because it was a tough time for this family. But I think it's well worth the read.
All right. At the Edge of the Orchard by Tracy Chevalier. Mm-hmm. And it's your turn next, Paul.
Okay. A nonfiction book.
All right.
The one that you know because Franz de Waal was interviewed by you.
Right.
His new book is called Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are? And the answer is maybe not. It is.
But he has some good ideas for new ways to try.
The most important thing is he just completely overthrows the old behaviorist notion of how you can tell how smart an animal is and how you can not tell. Like, my favorite little story in this is is a Aesop's fable. Do you remember that? The Aesop's fable about a crow is dying of thirst.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And has a finds a some
a
sort of
a pitch, something with water in it.
Something
that it can't
with water
get its beak
in it,
out
but
into,
it can't
right.
reach it.
Right.
And so they keep dropping stones.
To get it to splash up.
To get it to splash
to
up. And
level,
finally,
yep.
it's up, you know. And it turns out this is, you know, Aesop noticed it, and so did Franz de Waal.
Right. That birds, there are some birds that can do that, and they did studies, and even children couldn't figure that one out in some cases. It was such a fascinating read, that book.
Oh, it is. And it's not just dolphins and bonobos.
Right.
Although this is the guy who essentially discovered the bonobo, you know, as a character and an interesting primatological
Absolutely.
Event.
But I thought it was fascinating because he said not only are we too human-centric, we're too chimp-centric in our research also. He wants us to look beyond the world of primates. And this is a primatologist.
Yeah.
It's such a good book. I'm totally with you, Paul. That
yeah.
was such a fascinating read. And, you know, I have to read fast for work. I do a lot of skimming, and I couldn't skim. I'm going to be up all night reading this book. But I have no regrets.
Okay.
Are We Smart Enough to Know How Smart Animals Are by Franz de Waal. And it's your turn, Jan.
I have Sugar Creek Chronicle by Connie Mutel, who is an Iowa City writer. And she... the subtitle is Observing Climate Change from a Midwestern Woodland. And she kept a journal in 2012 of what she saw happening on her own property. And she is an engineer, but ecological engineer, really. And so she has a lot of hard data to back up what she's actually looking at. But one of the sort of well-constructed aspects of this book is that she's not just looking. She's also thinking about the things in her life that looking at this nature and thinking about the changes in nature make her think about.
Right.
And
her grandkids.
And her grandkids, yeah. And her, you know, her her mother's breast cancer and her own. But also she and her husband were first generation hippies, and they, you know, they did not believe that we would be where we are now. and we did not believe that, especially in terms of you know, the environment. We did,
right.
you know.
In,
I certainly didn't.
No, we thought we were going to make a lot of progress rather than vice versa.
And it's such a lovely book.
It is. It is. And she talks about the small things that you can do. And that she does do, that they do in their
And that her teenage boys were not too embarrassed by the composting toilet in their home. It's a lovely, lovely book. So that's A Sugar Creek Chronicle by Cornelia Mutel. And we are back to you, Judy.
Okay. I am going to talk about a book that Chris Kamenson had recommended. So I have not read this. She has. But the title is Stoned, Jewelry Obsession and How Desire Shapes the World by, I believe it's Asia Radin. What this book is about is questions about things like what does the diamond on your finger have to do with the GI Bill? Why were the glass beads that bought Manhattan for the Dutch initially considered a fair trade? This is an account of how eight jewels, just eight, shaped the course of history. The author is a jeweler and scientist and tells an original and often startling story about why we covet beautiful things and how that desire has transformed the world as we know it. Chris thought it was very fascinating. It was witty, interesting, and there's some beautiful photos.
All right. Well, it sounds fascinating. Now I wonder why I haven't had that author on the show. That sounds great.
Well, there you go.
All right. Stoned, Jewelry, Obsession, and How Desire Shapes the World. And again, with pronunciation, we're guessing here, but Asia Radin. And we're back to you, Paul.
Okay. The next book I have is by a writer that was new to me, Elizabeth McKenzie, who writes for The New Yorker, I guess. It's a novel called The Portable Veblen. And
it has a squirrel on the cover.
And it has, yes, as though that were the most logical thing to be on the cover. It's a squirrel holding the little thing that says a novel. And it's about a woman who is Norwegian and was named by her Norwegian parents Veblen. And anybody who has been in bookselling know that the portable Veblen is one of the most commonly used textbooks in the world.
About economics.
It's about economics.
Conspicuous consumption, wasn't that his discovery?
And it's about a couple that are about to get married, and they have one of these old money, new money problems between the parents of each, and they think they're really fond of each other, and the reader is not so sure.
Ooh.
And there are
again, this one's starting to sound stressful, but go on.
Well, no, there are many stressful moments, but it's written with such humor. It's written like early Anne Tyler, which is as good as you get.
Yes.
For me.
And for many of us, Paul.
Yes, I understand. I mean, her early books won Pulitzers.
Yeah.
Wow.
And here's what I'll tell you about the squirrel. The Veblen, the character, is very much trying to keep the families together and still get married. And she meets a squirrel.
A life-changing squirrel, huh?
A life-changing squirrel. Oh. And this will be a life-changing funny book anybody.
Oh, that sounds like a blast. All right. So it's The Portable Veblen by Elizabeth McKenzie. And Jan, back to you.
Well, I have Lab Girl. Have you been reading about Lab Girl? Well, Hope Jaron is a scientist, and she studies fossils. Actually, her work is really very interesting, but this book is more about her life. And when Paul was talking about Veblen, I thought, well, this would sort of be a good entry because she grew up in Austin, Minnesota, which I think is where Sherry Register is from, too, who's coming to Paradise next week. But that's just over the Iowa line, a very small town. And she was the last child of this Norwegian couple. And she said they never spoke to each other. Her father, I mean, It was just the way they were. And her father was a physicist in a community college, and she would go to his lab, and that was the closest that she ever got to either of her parents because he was the most relaxed there. And she talked about her mother had 10 siblings in this town, and she rarely saw them because they didn't speak to each other either.
Wow.
But anyway, she eventually leaves and goes to the University of Minnesota and then to Berkeley, where she gets a PhD in biology, and now she is in Hawaii. And the book is about her dedication to science and some of the really difficult experiences that she has in terms of gender bias. Oh. But she's funny, and
yeah.
she's very good at focusing back on the fossils. Mm-hmm. And
nice.
I
need to take the whole summer off and read. All right, that's Lab Girl by Hope Jahren. And all right, we have 2.5 minutes left, so everybody gets to say one more title very quickly. Judy, what's your last pick? And we will publish all the lists on our website in their entirety, but what's the last one you want to talk about?
A Man Called Ove by Frederick Backman. It's been out for a year, but it's one of the funniest, most heartwarming books I've read in a long time. I highly recommend it. It's perfect, perfect for summer.
All right. A Man Called Ove by Frederick Backman.
Isn't he Norwegian?
He is.
We went through a little Norwegian period
here. A little bit Norwegian phase today. Perfect. All right. Paul, what's your last one?
This is a National Book Award finalist from the last year by a woman named S.Y. Montgomery, and it's called The Soul of an Octopus, A Surprising Exploration into the Wonder of Consciousness. She became really obsessed with these strange animals, and she'd reach into the water, and they'd grab her.
Wow.
And it would be lovely. It's such a good natural history kind of book.
So read the Franz de Waal and read this one.
Yeah.
Can be your theme.
There's even a little overlap. Yeah.
All right. So that one is Soul of an Octopus by Cy Montgomery. And you get the final word today, Jan.
Well, I've got the Michelle Obama biography by Peter Slavin that came out last year and has just come out in paperback. And it is a wonderful read, really wonderful. She's so inspiring. But I guess if I just have 1 minute to tell a funny detail,
yeah.
It is that when she brought Barack home, her brother is a basketball coach at the University of Oregon, and so he took Barack out to play basketball, figuring I'll know who he is based on how he handles himself on the court. And he was super pleased. He was, you know, because Barack was both good and graceful and gracious in terms of manners on the, and so he thought, you know, this guy is wonderful, and I'm almost sorry that I know him so well because Michelle never stays with anybody.
Oh, that sounds great.
That's great.
All right. So that one is Michelle Obama, A Life by Peter Slavin. All right. Well, Jan Weissmiller, thank you so much. And
you're
Paul,
welcome.
Yeah, Paul Ingram, thank you.
It's been great.
Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Judy Stafford, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Judy Stafford of the Book People in Sioux City. And, of course, we will be publishing everybody's lists on our website, iowapublicradio.org, later today. So just in case you missed a title, it will be there. You can share it with all of your friends. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We have production assistance from Lauren Knutson. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.